All of the views and opinions expressed here are those of the individual speaking and may not be representative of Coding American. At times, language may be considered vulgar. Listener discretion is suggested.
You are now listening to the Coding Behind the Wheel podcast.
All right, we're live. I'm Scott from Koenig, and with me is Joey Redman, Drift Guru. You know who he is. If you don't, you're missing out. Joey writes the 10 Things Learned article that is published on formuladrift.com after each DFD event, and we're going to be knocking through those 10 points right now from Texas. We are covering Texas, Texas Motor Speedway, and so first off, I apologize to people that were upset that we missed the last round, but Joey forced his wife to give birth. I think, yeah, we had people actually message us, like, what's going on here? Did I miss one?
Hey, that's pretty cool.
It was cool, but really it's...
It was actually behind our Patreon paywall. You had to have sent us $100 to get...
It was a super chat. If you super chatted us, we sent you the podcast. So... The deal is that Joey, it's not Joey's wife's fault. It's not Joey's baby's fault. It's not my fault. It's Joey's fault. Joey forced his wife to go into labor right at the time we were supposed to record. Then I got busy, which is not my fault because, I mean, let's be honest, nothing is my fault. And then we just never got it done. And so we apologize, but we're back with you. For people that are...
I was kind of bummed about that. I didn't realize...
I know.
Man, for our millions of fans, I apologize.
I know. But we're back with you, and we sincerely apologize, and we are bringing you the best, or the most notable points from Texas. Jumping right into number 10 here, Taguchi versus Osbo, you're noting that as your favorite battle.
I am. Hold on, though.
Okay.
There were so many millions of people that
millions.
Were fans.
Millions, yeah.
I mean, should we maybe just, like, do, like a speed round on St. Louis?
You know, if we do, we got to watch the commentary, though, because this thing could get easily out of control as far as the length. People are driving to work, and then they're going to have to drive home, and then they're going to have to drive back to work.
Do this. Pull up to St. Louis.
All right.
You read the number. And I'll do like a 30-second
recap.
You don't do feedback. Like, I'll just
no
hit.
Feedback. I won't do it.
Yeah.
So it'll just
be like me doing like a monologue about St. Louis.
I appreciate that. Listen, for all you Drift fans, we're really doing it this time. This is yeah. Some big dog
stuff.
You're
trying to give the people what they want.
You know, that's what I like about you. Let me find the top 10 here.
I got to pull that up. You want to send it to you?
I don't know. Let's see. I can find it. It's, you know, FD's site is on point. So.
Yes, I agree.
I got it. St. Louis. I got it. No, yeah. I got it. I'm here.
Let's go. I'm ready.
So,
let's go.
Let's see. Number 10, Adam LZ goes top qualifier.
Wait, that's number 10?
Am I looking at the wrong list?
Hold on. Oh, no, hold on. I pulled up the 2018.
All right, so now back to my list. Top 10, Adam LZ goes top qualifier.
Yeah, so, I mean, this one, obviously, as you can see, I think what's interesting about Adam LZ is he improved every single round this year. It's, you know, spoiler alert, we know here in Texas. So I think we can move on from that one. But, you know,
right.
It just showed, I think the nice thing about him getting top qualifier is it did show, I think, that he belonged there, even though, you know, some people would like to argue that he didn't.
Yeah. And so, number 9, Alec Robin wins the Pro 2 event. And one thing I will say, I'm not going to add commentary, but is that this set up for what would have been a really interesting battle for the championship in Texas.
Yes. He was 41 points behind. Midwest Drift Union driver. He, I think, is on Koenig wheels. Great looking 350Z.
Yeah.
Perfect. Bam.
Number 8, Taguchi falls short, but looks promising in the Sylvia. And, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is another one that interestingly kind of continues into Texas.
Right.
You know, interesting to see the story build. We'll tackle him more in Texas, but, dude, his battle against Pitior was hot.
Number 7, fans cheated by the 5-minute clock.
This one we could probably do a whole podcast on.
I understand.
If you can, you know, hop on formula.com and read about it. I think the highlight, kind of the entertaining thing about it, was that Matt Kaufman's team dropped his car seconds away from being in the clock. They missed the time. Or no, right. Did they make it? I forget now. They made it. But in the process, they ran over the 10-minute clock.
Right.
Or the 5-minute clock, which is really funny. we did see a lot of other drivers go down that were like, Forsberg just missed the clock. Matt Field just missed the clock.
Yeah, so, yeah. The Field one was pretty heartbreaking, I will say.
It was. I agree. So, you know, if you want to read a little more detail into that, but that was definitely an interesting one.
Number six, and probably one of the more interesting things that I really wish we would have been able to deep dive into, which was Turek speaking out about the track.
How about I just read Turek's quote real quick?
Yeah, that will do it.
This is what Turek had to say about the track.
Yeah.
This track is super difficult. Me and Dai had a clean battle as far as no contact, but it was not the best way to win. Dai had a little bit of a slowdown, and I basically had to stop so I didn't come in contact with him around interclip 2. The track causes these contact issues because you are coming very fast into these inside clipping zones where you are jumping on the binders trying to make up ground. You're coming through a big smoke screen, so a lot of the time you can't even tell what is happening in front of you. And if you are in the right position, in chase, is my own annotation there. Yeah, you are coming into a turn blind, and you just chuck the car on muscle memory and hope that it comes out the other side at the right speed, angle, and line. It just creates a massive scenario where it can just go wrong. Typically, when you can't see what's happening in front of you, only a few times out of 10 you're going to make it. Maybe, or just hit a guy in front of you. This is why we've seen a lot of contact here.
Yeah. I mean, he summed up that event perfectly. We saw in multiple contact points, and I'm easily doing what I promised I wouldn't, so I'm just going to stop now.
Sure.
Number five, Rookie of the Year race is at a stalemate. Look, we sort of got a preview there. Right, moving on.
No longer.
Yeah. Number four, did the great spill of 2019 impact the inner clip to nightmares?
Here's just an interesting note I'm going to say about this that's not in here. This is a Koenig podcast exclusive.
Bringing it to you live.
I was actually on site at Formula Drift Texas.
Right.
As a fellow Texan. And I talked to a driver who ran very soon after the oil spill. And he was very confident to me in telling me that he didn't think that it had any impact. Now, mind you, there were some battles beforehand, but what he was saying is he actually thought a lot of those problems were being created by people thinking that there was going to be no grip, but then it never showing up. So that was just an interesting perspective from a driver that ran very soon after the spill.
Did you just say that there was a placebo oil spill?
I mean, that's what he told me.
All right. I like it. Number three, Odie Bakshi's wild chase, but still doesn't win.
Yeah, man. This one, I'm really disappointed. I think it was his season to win. I think he really had a chance. I mean, he obviously came out the blocks, and he's just like, he's falling short, but like this short.
Yeah.
It's kind of painful to watch.
Yeah. Number two, another Dean win signals he wants a third championship. Going for the three.
Yeah, we can cover this in Texas.
Cool. Number one, Frederick Osbo can hold off the three-peat, and I kind of feel like that's the same answer there, too.
Or just not likely.
Right. All right.
But yes.
So we're going. Let's get back into Texas. We hope that little recap was enough for you, for our FD little friends there. And so get right into it. Taguchi versus Osbo. You're saying this is your favorite battle, and I will say that when you wrote this, I said, what? And I went back and watched it three times, and okay. I agree that it was a pretty awesome battle.
But you didn't clown me first for saying that.
Yeah, well, I did. Yeah, but okay. That's not too far off from the, you know. Listen, the part that people don't see behind the walls of the podcast is that for a few minutes before we do the podcast, we banter on about some things where a lot of our disagreement comes out, so that I don't end up sitting here ranting too much in a disagreement of points. And usually Joey persuades me to come on to his side, which is why it's so mild tempered. But listen, it really was. I mean, it was a diehard battle watching that car explode itself. But Taguchi has really stepped up, and I think that ditching that GTR was probably one of the better things that he's done from that point.
Yeah, I agree. I think one of the interesting things is he's running a VQ38, the GTR motor now.
Yeah.
So Forsberg isn't the only one doing it in the series. And I don't know. Forsberg has not been Forsberg, I feel like, since he abandoned his Titan motors. I don't know what that's a mixture of or combination of, but it also, since Taguchi's done so good with the GTR motor, it's kind of made like where I've been ranking Forsberg like drop a little, just because Taguchi's doing it so much better, and it still seems like, you know, Forsberg's not there yet with the motor, so I don't know. Like, it's just interesting. It's an interesting dynamic. I don't mean to take away from Taguchi on this, because obviously he deserves a lot of talking points. I mean, even just in the photo I used in the top 10, I mean, he's an inch or two from just eating shit, so to speak. I don't know if you can say that on this podcast, but
can now.
perfect. I just think it's really memorable. I think in St. Louis he performed really well, in Texas he performed really well, and I think it's more important to point it out too, because, you know, obviously people are looking for the, you know, Dean Chelsea battle to be crazy, but it's like, this was a good battle, man. And I think it was already a great battle, and then Taguchi like hitting the front clip and running over his headlight, and then everything exploding, then being so close. And listen, he didn't give Osbo an easy pat. Like, he pushed Osbo.
Yeah.
You know, in that battle, like, he really forced Osbo to go 100%. And that's not something a lot of drivers in this series can say they've ever done.
So, no, it's a hard push. And it's a really good battle to watch. Like, if you really go back and watch it, like I had to three times, and you know, the car comes apart and breaks apart in all the climatic spots of the course to give it just that, like, piece de resistance, you know what I mean? So,
yeah, exactly.
Anyhow, number nine, Adam LZ pushed for the pro competition in 2020. Look, I mean, I think what's interesting here, I'm going to let you go first, and then I'll add it in.
I actually wanted to defer to you.
Okay.
But let me do this. A, have you actually watched any of his vlogs?
I've watched a few. I'll be honest with you. I like Adam personally. Okay. And you know, what's that?
Nothing.
I like Adam personally, and I think he's a smart guy. And I think the one thing that people may not give him credit for is how smart he really is. He's a pretty calculated guy, and if you really meet him personally, you'll know that. And with that, I think he knew everything. I think he was extremely self-aware this entire season. I don't think there was ever a point that he was saying he was better than he was. I don't think there was ever a point where he didn't realize what was stacked against him. And I think that same thing filters through for this. I believe Adam LZ will be back for FD Pro 2 next season. And I believe that we're going to see some really interesting things from him next season. That's what I think.
Okay. Do you think he should go to pro?
I think the answer is no, and I think he knows that. And not just
Why?
For – so here's the thing. I believe that he potentially has the skill level to compete there. I also think that going back to how calculated Adam is, one, I think that there's – he knows how much money it would take to do double the amount of rounds. But two, I believe that Adam knows that he gains a lot by having the extra seat time in Pro 2 and being able to do some of these events and really get his team and his skill level very comfortable in Pro 2 before he makes a jump. And I do think in 2021 we have a very, very strong chance at seeing Adam LZ make a jump to Pro.
All right, let's move on.
Did you think I nailed that? Or you don't agree? Do you agree? Do you at least?
I don't know. I mean, maybe I don't really care about his business acumen, I guess, or whatever in the context of this. Like,
yeah.
I just want to see him run pro. Like,
I understand that.
I'm going to say something that I'm sure someone will use to bite me in the butt later.
Love it.
But I feel like I watched every one of his vlogs, and I feel like the biggest problem with his vlogs is that, like, he doesn't have a strong cast of characters to go along with him. Like, it's really cool that he's in Pro 2 and showing this behind the scenes of Pro 2, but I just think from, like, his content and, like, from his YouTube fellowship, him battling Pro 2 driver in the top 8 is nowhere near as exciting or interesting to get an insight behind if he was battling Frederick Osmo, DeJore, James Dean.
Okay, so I don't disagree with anything you just said, but what does that have to do with making the jump from Pro 2 to Pro?
Well, that's why I want him to be in Pro. I want.
Oh,
the,
well, all right, but you didn't.
I want the behind the scenes of the real show.
Yeah, okay, me too. I mean, but that wasn't the. That's not a reason to make a jump, is it?
Yeah, why not? So you're. GT3RS. You can fund a few years in FD.
Now, listen, I don't believe that funding is the problem here. I believe, like, okay. I said, I think it's a smart move, but, like, don't you think this has more to do with the correct progression? Like, I think that he feels he can benefit by having extra seat time in Pro 2 for next year.
I don't think so. A lot of the things that he did wrong, I don't think.
Another year in Pro 2 will help them that overcome that?
Like, look at Orlando, his worst performance, right?
Right.
What he did wrong, in my opinion, and I did ask I asked a championship driver about this, who confirmed, I haven't spoken to Adam LZ, but, like, what they told me was, like, they're like, watch the video. He's basically cutting in, and he's going to hit the cone. And, like, instead of hitting the cone, he straightens up and goes around it. And he's like, at a grassroots event, that's something you would do, right? So, like, someone doesn't have to go shuck the cone. He's like, dude, it's Formula D. You just drive right through it. You'll get a small deduction. And he's like, he probably would have qualified in the top 5.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's home track. So that's another caveat and balance. But I honestly think he could learn far more getting – I think seat time – is way more important than being in Pro 2. I mean, in Pro 2 weekend, you're driving 12 laps. You're not, other than, like, understanding the Formula Drift format and the speed to be like, okay, we're going from qualifying to driving to this, like, how things happen in a very succinct manner, which he's done. I don't think there's much to learn. I'd argue he's probably better than the 10 worst guys in Pro anyway, like, as he stands right now.
Yeah, I think I agree with that.
To me, if you look at who, well, we'll just talk about James Dean real quick for 1 second. James Dean drifts the most out of everyone in Formula Drift. I don't think that's a bold statement. He's on different continents, doing whatever he can to drive, and it's translating into 3 championships. So to me, I don't know. The value in Pro 2, maybe the value of Pro 2 is that he can spend more other weekends driving, but I think you're going to progress from driving at he just finished No Coast Bash in New Mexico. He did Hyperfest earlier this year. You know, going on down that list, I'm pretty sure he did Grid Life. I don't quite remember off the top of my head, but, like, participating in all those events to me is, like, what's going to help you as a driver. 90% of pro, I think, is having a crew and budget cut in budget, right? Like, those are the two things that stop everybody.
Yeah.
He's got a pro driver spotter, which I guess he probably lose Pat, obviously, because Pat will be driving against him. But, like, he has enough contacts and connections, I think, that he can fill those spots correctly. If I watch his videos, his crew seems like they know what's going on. Like,
they do. Yeah.
Pro, man. Just go to pro. And here's the thing. If he sucks at pro or he has a lot of struggle or issues, so to speak, that's good TV. As a former television or movie producer.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, I think they're good points. I think that, you know, I mean, I get your point. I get your, I don't know, maybe if I run to him at SEMA, maybe I'll venture to ask if he will go on the record for a podcast exclusive as to what his thought is. I don't know that I'll get an answer or he'll want to do that because that's typically his own content, but never know.
You should be like, why didn't you run the Conan Hypogram? Good question. Anyway.
Not going there. Anyhow. Number eight. What? What did you say?
Hold on.
You going to ask? About that. All right. Travis Reeder puts space in the Rookie of the Year race. He's a good driver.
Talk about a driver with a great taste in wheels.
Woof. Feels good. Travis Reeder is a good driver, and he proves it. And, you know, the fact that they've been putting work into that 240 and he's kind of, you know, been able to step that up, I think that helps him out quite a bit. And I don't know. There it is.
Yeah. I think the only thing I'm holding against Travis Reeder at this point is the 240 is really lame, and I wish he was still in the Camaro.
Okay, so I think next year you'll see some pretty exciting things out of that whole camp. So
I've heard some things talked about. I think it's cool. It's hard when you like give me the full deal and then you're like, oh, but here's a 240.
Yeah. And I don't believe that this is how they thought this was going to pan out from the end, but I think that this is the best at this stage if you were on that team.
Hey, I get it. I understand. It's racing. You got to do what you got to do.
Right.
They're going to win Rookie of the Year. Unless Dylan Hughes goes on one or they really crap the bed and everyone else. So I understand. I just, to me, you know, the Camaro is way more exciting.
Understand. Number seven, Beecham is the Pro 2 champ. I mean, not too much more to say there except he's champ. I mean, going back to St. Louis, you know, Robbins, win there kind of set him up to be neck and neck. This really went down to a 1-2. You know, Robbins put up a good fight, but at the end of the day, Beecham, he outperformed him, and he's a good driver.
Beecham's good, man.
Yeah, he is.
I like Beecham. It was a tough break. Robbins lost to Adam LZ, right, in Final Four?
Yep. That's, I'm 99% sure.
Yeah. So, what can you do, man? I kind of like Alec Robbins. I think he did a good job. Because he finished third on the podium.
Yeah.
I don't know what to dig in here. You know, eight drivers, from what I understand, get licenses.
Right.
I don't know if any of these guys are making the jump. A lot of them, I don't know if they're ready. Beecham, I don't really know.
You don't think they're going to make the jump, or you don't think that they should make the jump? Because I think there's a few guys that are going to try to go pro.
Out of this list, let me just run through the drivers. Mm-hmm. I don't know who might try and go pro.
Yeah.
Anyway, Trenton Beecham, I think he could put up a good fight. I think he would need to get some work done to the car to be a little more competitive.
100%.
But I mean, he seems pretty well funded. He's got a nice big rig. I'm not sure. I could also see him easily just coming back and trying to defend his title. If I remember right, he got a license last year as well and didn't utilize that. Alec Robbins is probably one of the guys on this list I know maybe the less about. He's a Midwest Ruthenian guy. His car seems pretty capable. I mean, if you look, I mean, he missed – I don't remember what happened to him in Orlando. He didn't qualify. But otherwise, he seems pretty
on point. Yeah, he's pretty solid.
Yeah. Garrett Denton, I think he could probably make the jump better than some guys. I don't know his hunting situation and whatnot, but he's also a Midwest Transunion guy. But the interesting thing is, from what I understand, like, his family's, like, real big into, like, circle tracks and racing.
Right.
So I think they probably have more of like a path and understanding of how to do that. He's also really young. I want to say he's like in his like early 20s. So he's got plenty of time too. I think he could stay and grow. Josh Robinson, I don't know what Josh Robinson's plans are. I think he's living now full time in Texas.
Yeah, I, you know, just from what I know from Josh, and I'm not saying there's no inside scoop here, so it's not like I spoke to him about it. But, you know, I know how it was. I mean, he was a Pro One driver. I believe at the beginning of this year, his intention was to be a Pro One driver, and I think there were some funding things that stopped that from being able to be reality. So I would say if Josh is able to get the funding, I would think that he tries to make the jump back to Pro One.
I could see that. I mean, I was going to say out of everyone on the list, he's probably the most likely.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And then Rome, I was trying to remember how Jared says his name on the stream, and I can't even remember. Charpenter? Is that sound right? Rome Charpenter? He's another guy I know less about.
I felt that way a lot with some of the different Pro 2 drivers this year, I'll be honest with you. I feel like I don't really know too much about them.
Yeah, I know people call him Jorn for whatever reason.
Yeah.
I guess he used to be like a stunt guy. I know he's like Inland Empire, Southern California guy. He seems pretty solid. I don't know if he should go to Pro 2. Like I said, I don't know a lot about him. He had some issues in Atlanta and kind of some issues in Texas. So, I don't know. But when he was on, right? He podiumed twice. Sixth, Ole Jaeger. I really like him. He's in, you know, Oslo's old car. He's from Norway.
Right.
Cool dude. He won Atlanta last year. He's got some decent pedigrees. He won Gotville Super 3. He was Scandinavian champion back when. I imagine he's probably not going to go up due to funding.
Right.
He also was, I think, eligible for a license the year before. We got Adam LZ, which we covered forever. And then we have Kendrick Meyer, another BMW guy, which I think is really interesting. He's from Doylestown, Pennsylvania, because that is actually where Chris Forsberg and Tony Angelo were from.
Right.
So quite the racing pedigree there. He's got a cool BMW. He banged it up a lot, real bad in Texas.
I think BMWs in Texas don't go well. If we can refer back to Mr. Danny George.
Yeah. He did not look as bad as Danny George, luckily for him.
Well, that's because Danny George was on his roof.
Yeah. You know what's interesting? I don't think I've ever talked to him before, so I don't really have a good feel where his head's at, but anyway, that's a rundown of the guys that have their licenses. Say what you will. You know, maybe Robinson and Beecham are probably, I would say, my two leads to try and step into pro.
You know, and so I think that there's a potential that you could see one or two other drivers step up into pro. I think that this is one of those points, and I mean, speaking from the guy that doesn't drift and doesn't have any really FD, you know, interior experience. But I think this is that point where people have to really consider what it takes to run a pro program all the way through. Because I think that this is that part where even if you feel like you're going to gain a tremendous amount, you know, I've heard that out of Farouk. He's been pretty vocal. He was pretty vocal about, you know, when he made the jump into pro that he was, you know, he was going to learn so much more out of pro. But listen, here's the thing. At the end of the day, what this really comes down to is when you get there, can you run a pro program? I forget the driving part, and I know that's hard for people to hear, but like the driving, you know, Adam LZ said it really, really well. He said, you know, when he was summing it up, I believe this is in one of his vlogs from Texas, he basically said, you know, he knows what he's capable, what he's not capable. He knows what it entails. He found one of the most difficult thing was that driving is like 15 or 20% of the total effort it takes to run a Pro 2 program, and the rest of it is really all in dealing with sponsors and parts and managing the team and running the team and logistics and et cetera, et cetera. And I think that that amplifies for jumping into Pro. So, you know, a lot of guys, I think, make the jump and just aren't prepared for that. There are a lot of good Pro 2 drivers, but unfortunately they still operate very grassroots, and not that they shouldn't, but I think that there's a big transition from Pro 2 to Pro in that respect. So I don't know. I think that that's one of those things people really have to consider about getting their ducks in a row before they make that jump.
Sure. I mean, I think Pro, there's even less learning time to learn, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think I covered. I just say, you know, if you want to learn how to drive and improve your driving, go run Pro-Am, go run Bash events. Hell, go to Ebisu.
Right.
And, you know, buy a car from Power Vehicles and do 6,000 laps in one weekend on 3 sets of tires. Like, that's what's going to really up your driving curve.
All of which LZ has done.
So there you go. That's why I think he's ready.
All right, we're going to move on to number 6. Matt Field almost changed history. Man, let me tell you something. That tire wall is serious. It's a serious piece, man.
I kind of have goosebumps just thinking about that battle already. It's a shame because if Matt Field is 2 inches in, or they made the Corvette just a little shorter,
okay.
He wins that battle, man. And then I think there is zero chance the judges would have favored with Dean. Dean got smoked.
Yeah.
Dean got worked around that track. You assume that Osmo still makes it to where Osmo made it, and it's like, man. And then it's almost like a 5-driver race for Irwindale.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, essentially, statistically speaking, it's a 6-driver race, but I think we safely know that only 2 people can really win. If you haven't watched that battle, it's worth it. It's going to make your neck hurt because Matthew goes on a ride.
You know, it's really interesting that when you think that 6 inches, I've watched it a few times, it can't be too much more than that. If it's not 6 inches, it can't be too much more than that. I mean, that tire wall, and I've heard drivers, especially last year, and was it the year before already? It might have been the year before. Really complain about that tire wall, that when it bites you, it grabs you and just tosses you in a whole bunch of different directions. And that's what happened. Like, he just, you know, got that rear, you know, the corner of the rear of his car kind of just touched. It really almost looks like such a mild touch, but it's enough to kind of jerk his car back around and throw him, you know, left nose right in. And then the car just kind of takes a beating all the way down the tire wall. And the car just comes apart. So it's hard to watch. It sucks. Moving on to number 5, James Dean brings back the 100-point score. Interesting thing you said to me just prior to starting and go.
Wait, I said something interesting?
Yeah, you said you believe that was not a 100-point score.
Oh, yeah. I don't think it was a bad score. I think the interesting thing is they gave him a 99 on his first run, and then he did better on his second run. So, like, where else do they have to go? But when I watched that run in real time, I mean, even just listen to Jared and Ryan, they're like, oh, it's a really good run. You know, it was technically really good, but, man, that Justin Pollock 100-point run, like,
I know, I had the excitement with it.
I remember where I was. Like, I was like, oh, my God, if he keeps this up. Like, it just lacked that extra oomph.
Yeah.
That you wanted from it. I will say this. If Justin Pollock doesn't get the 100-point run earlier this year, I think my perspective changes. And I'm like, yeah, that was probably a 100-point run. But, like, I don't know. I think I mentioned this on the podcast before. I actually think there needs to be a way where I think a perfectly technically performed lap earns you like an 80 and 85. And then I think there needs to be some kind of like
excitement level, style points or something.
Factor type thing. Yeah, because I, you know, in tandem, Denofa, I think, got some credit for his ridiculous angle. But man, like, I think there needs to be something in the system that encourages that. I think whether you're a diehard fan, whether you're a driver at some level, or you're a new fan, I think you can watch that and be like, holy shit, that's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's entertaining. I think across the spectrum, I think it's really hard to find things that entertain a driver, a new fan, and a veteran fan. And I think that does. So it's like, there's just this struggle, I think, where like, how do we get, you know, I have no doubt that James Dean can replicate something similar to that. I think he can. But he's trying to, just like I think Osgo, they're just driving to extract the most amount of points they can.
Yeah.
So it's like you're almost like discouraging some of the entertainment. So I don't know. That's my 2 cents. I think it was a great lap. I'm sure people will call me a James Dean hater in the comments.
Listen, so I had... I think a lot of people had the same reaction, and somebody actually said to me in my office that they're like, they watched it and they said, oh, I don't think it's a 100-point run. And I said, well, why don't you? They're like, because it's not a 100-point run. And I'm like, okay, but why isn't it a 100-point run? And so, I mean, nothing. And my whole comment back to them was something that you had said to me after Pollock. You said to me, you're watching it wrong. Don't look for the part where he did really well. Look, it was like, watch the run and tell me where to take points away.
Right. I did tell you that.
And I remember that. And when I watched James Dean's run, I'm like, well, if you play by those rules, it's a 100-point run.
Right.
So, I don't know. I think we've said everything we need to say, right? Moving on to number 4, Osbo and Irwindale don't have a great history. I don't think anybody will argue this. You know?
This is a tough one. You know, I haven't decided personally, is Osbo have bad luck in Irwindale, or is he just so good that he can always manage to almost get there at Irwindale?
Oh, I understand.
You know what I mean? Like,
I do.
Like, what, like, obviously, I think as a layman person, you would just say, Frederick Osbo can't get the job done at Irwindale. But it's like, sure, but then is that just because he's the only one driving so good for the other 6-7 rounds that he's, you know, got this long shot to beat James Dean and can't make it happen?
Right.
To me, I think there's just a larger point of, I think this is one of the most disappointing season for drifters not named James Dean. and I say that because what James Dean has done this season, I don't think would have been possible in any other Formula Drift season, including the last two that he's won in history. Like, the number one thing that usually you need to win a Formula Drift championship is consistency.
Yeah.
And James Dean has not been consistent.
Right.
So it's just interesting that, like, some of these real top pro drivers have left the door open for him. You know, Forsberg won a championship. Didn't even win an event, his last championship, but he podiumed for 7 rounds in a row.
Right.
That's crazy. But it's like, it's been a race of, like, who can drop the ball, you know, first. Like, you shuffle around a few of Odie's worst performances and average them out against the rest of his rounds. I mean, man, Odie has one more podium in there, something like that. And then maybe like one battle where he didn't lose as early as he did. And I mean, he could have a 50, 60 point gap on James Dean or something like that. So I'm not going to lie. I'm cheering for Osbo at Irwindale. I don't know. I just don't want Dean to take the 3-peat. I think the amount of disrespect it puts on Formula Drift and American drivers as a whole. I can't get behind that.
You've mentioned it. In fact, I would love to find the podcast where I believe, and I don't want to quote because that would be too literal, but I believe you said if Dean three-peats, I'm not watching Formula Drift anymore.
I mean, I might have.
There was something to that effect. I don't remember if you were giving it up, or but so listen, that's just full disclaimer. That's Joey Redman's opinion only, and I don't feel that way necessarily at all. So,
I might bring myself to watch another season, but it seems like we're getting into this Jimmy Johnson NASCAR situation, which I don't know. He's so good. I mean, James Dean, if he wins at Irwindale, I think he is undisputed the best drifter in history.
Right.
Drifting's history is very short, so it's not that dramatic of a statement, perhaps, but he's the best. I don't care what anybody says, what anyone brings up or tries to point out. Like, James Dean is the best drifter in history across the land. He's now dominated in the two most competitive continents of drifting. I mean,
yeah.
Europe and United States definitely carry the heavy weight.
Of drifting.
You know, I'm sure there's some people that will argue.
Well, you might hear Australia thrown in there too, a little bit.
Probably Japan, where it was founded. But the problem I think now in Japan is that the series mismanagement there is just. I don't know. There's so much drama with D1 that's come back. I think it's really stepped back. I really think your newer drift fans mostly look at, I think, Japan. If you want to talk about from a grassroots opportunity and like these next series, I think Japan kind of leads the ground in that kind of stuff. But from a professional competitive, the FIA event to me is kind of a sham. Formula Drift Japan is good, but they don't have the big names out there. So it's, Japan, from a competitive standpoint, is watered down. I also think if James Dean shipped a car there, he'd just dominate everyone in Japan. So he's the best.
Yep.
There was a time where I went about Daigo Saito was the best, and he didn't come anywhere damn near close to winning 3 championships in a row.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you're not going to – yeah. There's nothing else to be said. That's
okay,
that's it.
Moving on.
Visix pushing Osbo into the wall puts a big question up for Irwindale. That was a pretty nasty crash.
Foul play, man.
That was a nasty crash, too.
It was bad.
That was bad.
It felt really bad. It was bad. Interesting that they got the car back. Only Steph Papadakis, man.
I mean, he's the best. I don't care what anybody says. I will say that Stephen Papadakis is the best. He just is.
I think if that was a lot of other teams, I think that would be the end of the season.
He's the best. I don't even know what else to say. I feel like I need to make a t-shirt. Stephen Papa, he's the best. The guy is incredible.
I will say this. I find it really interesting. Like, you know, he's got this YouTube channel going now.
And it's fantastic. If you have not checked it out, you all know, not you, them, everybody listening right now, stop what you're doing. Put this on. In fact, if you're watching on YouTube, I'm going to actually dare to say, put this on pause. First, subscribe to our YouTube channel if you're not, and give us a thumbs up. But then, put me on pause. Go over.
Drop a link in the description.
I don't. Am I allowed to do that? Are there rules? Can I do that? Maybe. Why not? Anyhow, listen. Go to Papadakis Racing's YouTube channel. It is the most fun for any auto enthusiast. It's the equivalent to going to Disney World. It's that good. It's fantastic.
It's pretty good. It's definitely allowed because I follow this guy who does a vlog in Hawaii.
Yeah.
And he has other people show up and then he's always like posting their thing. Anyway.
If I remember when we edit this, I will make sure that we link his channel.
Or at least put the spelling of his name maybe in the description because, you know, you have to admit, I love the guy, but like we tell people to go find Steph Papadakis on YouTube. Who knows what they're going
to
be typing?
I will listen. I can link to it. The only if as long as I remember it. But I'm pretty sure that when I send 64 people to his, what is it? What is it? Like 200,000 people now.
I think I don't even know. He has videos with like millions of views. It's crazy.
I mean, because they're the best videos, they're best car videos ever. Like, if you're a car technical, he's got 319,000 subscribers. This dude is on the fast track to a mil. I'm telling you, this is what legends are made of.
Watch out, Adam LG.
Come on. Stephan Papadakis, baby. He's taking apart, new Supras, cutting engine blocks in half just because he wants to show you how the valve train works. That's what I'm saying. Anyhow, please take on to your your number three. We diverted so hard there.
Man. You know, it's really interesting. Well, we're not even talking about this. The point's over. It's not even worth talking about. It's amazing. They're going to fix the car. He's Steph Papadakis. But it's really interesting. You know, I got to give Papadakis credit for, like, being able to reboot his career in this industry so many times.
Ooh, this is an interesting topic all on its own, though.
I agree.
Because do you feel it's a reboot?
Kind of. Well,
I don't think he was ever there. He just was playing behind the scenes.
Yeah, well, this is how I look. I think he's had three phases of his career. How about that?
Fair.
I would say phase one was when I found him when I was 16 years old. And, I mean, yeah, on Honda Tech. And this dude, I don't even remember all of the records that Civic broke. That hideously yellow.
All of them.
A lot of them. He was like first all motor, 10 second, 9 second, right? Like maybe 8 second.
You know, this is an interesting thing only because it goes back to, and if you want to see any kind of the prelude to some of this stuff, go watch our podcast with Jason Whitfield. Because
he competed with Steph back then.
Well,
you know, right?
I don't even think it's just that. I mean, listen, so let's look at – so Jason was best friends and kind of, I don't know, I want to say family, you know, almost family with Sean Carlson. And Sean Carlson and was very influential. And I believe this, and I feel bad. Like, I'm not that Steph's listening to this, but, like, if I don't do this justice or I do this incorrectly, I don't mean any disrespect and I don't want to – not spread fact, but I believe that Sean Carlson was very influential on Stephan Papadakis and learning and kind of I know Sean had a lot to do with the building of that Civic. So, I think, and Sean was, I mean, just as brilliant and as, you know, I think Steph got a lot of that. You know, it was everything from Sean, but I think there was a lot of, things that came, you know, that Sean influenced him in coming up and on his programs. And man, I don't know. I just super freaking talented. Yeah. So that part, all right. So stage one.
So stage one of his career, drag racer,
mm-hmm.
excelled at it, did really well. I would say stage two of his career, drifting.
Okay.
He made that transition along with Sean Carlson, but Sean Carlson took the building managing side. Papadakis tried to drive, realized he wasn't the best at it. I mean, maybe he still thinks he's the best. I don't know. I don't want to speak for him. Turned around, got a program, found a driver, and I think a young driver that due to the amazing scouting of Rex Magazine, I'm sure he located,
mm-hmm.
I pinpointed Oswald pretty early, I think, of being an impressive driver. Got under him, created a championship team. He obviously had already won some championships with Tanner Faust, which I think is a little less impressive. Cause, I mean, Tanner. Reinvented himself. So I would say phase two. So you got phase one drag racing, phase two drifting, and phase three medium mogul.
Didn't he have something to do with Odie too? Earlier on when he was drifting, what was Odie's first? Before the arc, before he was driving the Hyundais, what was he drive? What did he drive?
An S14?
For some reason, I thought he was. I'm sorry. I might be missing. Anyhow.
Anyway, that's all. I just it's amazing to me in an industry that I think is already so tough to make money in. Not working directly for a company that he's managed to. There's not a lot of people that can excel at drag racing and drifting already.
Yeah.
And then most of those guys that are good at that side of the business are not good at the media side of the business. And not only do I think he's good at the media side of the business, he's presenting technical stuff at a level that is not vomit worthy. Like, no offense, but like, I don't really care what the inside of a 2020 Toyota Super Engine looks like. Even if I bought one.
Yeah.
I'm not going to touch that thing. You know what? I've got money, and I hopefully can find a mechanic if I really want to get wild with that thing. It's just not for me. I know you're more of like a wrenching kind of guy. Yep. I just like driving German cars that are perpetually broken. So,
right.
You know, I don't know. Regardless of how I feel, I don't want to open up a 2020 Supra engine. My limit of technical expertise ends at swapping a B16 into a CRX. But it's interesting. It's consumable. You know, he went to NHRA, and I watched that video, and I learned a lot. And I thought I mean, I've worked in one way or the other, you know, in Nobody Drag Racing and some of the NHRA Sport Compacts.
Yeah.
And he was dropping knowledge. And I was on the ground there for a long period of time, you know, in some of these teams' trailers. And I was like, oh, I didn't know that. So we really just made a Steph Avadakis commercial for free here. But we can move on. That was why I said I think he's managed to reboot his career or gain relevance with a new generation once something new has come around the corner.
There are some people that will influence entire – you know, segments of people. And there are some people that will spread information because they want to spread truth and they want to show people and they want to educate. And they're so unconcerned how it could monetarily not, you know, impact them in a negative way because they're more prone to whatever. And I know that there's the YouTube thing, and I'm sure that there's been a conscious thought process of developing a YouTube channel for the revenue it could potentially bring to him as a supplement or whatever he does. But I really think Steph's one of those people that he is not worried about spreading information because he knows that at the end of the day, there's only going to be a certain type of person and a number of people that are going to do the type of things that he does. He's naturally – I mean, he's super, super talented, and he's super knowledgeable, and I think that what makes him just even that much better is the fact that he's putting all this knowledge out there in a way that's just so consumable. So, I think he's one of the greats behind this industry, and I think he deserves all the accolades that should come with it. That's true. So – I'm going to move on to number two. Chelsea Denofa puts a full throttle show on and wins. Listen, you can say what you want right from qualifying when he almost went, a reverse entry. he brought it. And that's what we love about Chelsea. We talk about it time and time again. We know him to be an exciting chase driver. But, you know, Chelsea puts it all out there and he drives with aggression, and he makes the sport exciting. So seeing him on the podium is something that makes me happy.
Not even the podium, maybe he won the whole thing.
No, I'm just saying, like, anytime you put him near there, it's almost like rewarding everything we love about drifting.
He had a lot of fans in Texas.
I understand. He should. Yeah.
Him and Matt Field, I just want to be a little more consistent so they can make a run at the championship.
I understand. I think a lot of people probably feel the same way you do.
2020, new decade, new shit.
Right.
James Dean, I want him to finish ninth.
I think maybe we need to get signs made. You know, maybe even do the football thing. We paint our bellies and we can go out and we got to, like, you know, do some crowd stuff out there. I don't know. I'm just saying.
I'll tell you what, you pilot that in New Jersey, and then I'll back it up in Texas.
Listen, for those who are watching the live stream next year, and you see me hit this one random guy, it's me. That's not going to happen. Anyhow, do we have anything left to say on this, or have we made it through on that point, really?
I mean, I want to talk about the Nova for the next hour, if you've got the time. But
I know, but man, I think... Yeah,
go watch some of his battles, man. That thing with Odie was wild.
Yep.
There was another battle where he can't remember who it was. He got so much angle coming out of that first section of the track that, like, I thought he might be deducted, and he wasn't. And I think Ryan Lontaine said that was the most angle you could get while deducting the smallest amount of speed to not receive a deduction. Like,
yeah.
He was, like, on that line.
Yeah.
Which, listen, being on that line is super entertaining, but unfortunately that doesn't translate to championships.
No, because it's super hard technically to get yourself back online to be able to finish the rest of the course.
Yeah.
I mean, and clearly if you watch that run, that's what happened. I mean, he even pulled it out to get out of that situation, but then it was hard to get back online. So the last part of that run was a little rough. But he's a good driver, and he deserves wins like that. So
hear, hear.
Number one, James Dean is looking for that three-peat. Listen, I think we all know what's going on here. If it happens, Joey's going to quit watching drifting, which means there's no more podcasts that will happen for next year. So I think you all need to do your best to find a twig. And when James Dean is coming around the first, you know, first turn there, you got to throw it into the spokes of his wheel and try to lock up the car.
Thoughts and views on this podcast are not expressed of Koenig Wheels LTD.
You know, like with the bicycle, used to jam the sticks into... Anyhow. All right. Well, listen, if you didn't get that analogy, you never rode a bicycle. I don't know what to tell you. And if in case you needed me to explain the joke, the funny part about it is a stick wouldn't really stop anybody driving a car with the wheel spinning. So I explained everything.
Well, how big of a twig could it be?
Well, we're not going to shove a tree trunk into his wheel.
It's getting heavy.
All right, let me disclaimer this because I feel like we went a south direction. Koenig does not encourage anybody to cause harm on anybody. Please do not cause harm. This individual input was only the opinion of Scott only. All right.
Listen.
Next, on to you.
If James Dean wins the championship, our podcast next year, I think we're about Formula Drift Japan, I guess. there's no way he can 4-peat. There's no way.
4-peat or 3-peat?
4-peat. Like, win again.
I mean, I believe that there was some point where you said, there's no way this can happen as a 3-peat.
Well, listen, get your video editor, and then you can queue up that there's no way to 4-peat for the Texas Top 10 next year.
We're going to be 7 years from now, and we're going to be queuing up every year how Joey said, there's no way it can be a 5-peat. There's no way it can be 6-peat. So, listen, I think what we have done here is we have just finished.
Okay.
because there's nothing really more to say about point number one. And, you know, look, I don't know what to say. Listen, we have done some things here in this podcast, and if you have gotten to the end, which I don't believe anybody has, but if there's anybody still here listening to us, we went through St. Louis. We apologize. Made it through Texas. And we are looking forward to Irwindale, and Joey is not looking forward to James Dean winning a championship.
That's a little out of context, but sure.
You do look forward to James Dean winning a championship?
I'm not looking forward to James Dean's utter continued domination of Formula Drift and would like to see someone else with some talent step up and take the reins of the series.
So you're not looking forward to James Dean winning a championship. I mean, you can say what you want to say, but at the end of the day, I'm pretty sure we all know what you just descriptively used a lot of verbiage for to describe. James, I wish you well, man. I hope you go out and get it. So there. Anyhow, that's it. Do you have anything else you want to add for this beautiful podcast?
I would like you to...
Mm-hmm.
Like, subscribe.
Please do. It would make me happy.
Kind of real.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Ooh. If you're watching or listening now, whether you be on iTunes or whatever, head over to YouTube and subscribe to our YouTube channel. And then if you're on YouTube and you're at the end here, listen, if you're here and you're watching right now, also go and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Even if you don't listen to podcasts, maybe just put a 5-star review or something in there because we've brought you such incredible value. How does that feel? Is that too gimmicky? That was gimmicky.
Why is that gimmicky? Yeah, sure. Who cares?
Hey, 5-star it. 5-star, thumbs up, subscribe. It feels great. Do you have anything else you want to add to this thing?
Think about how many wheels you would buy and then add one more. And then
I have never asked them to buy wheels, and I don't intend to now. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. I hope you enjoyed these podcasts. And, you know, I mean, listen.
Dyson Koenig Hypergram. So.
Ooh.
I don't know.
Listen, we appreciate it.
Dyson Koenig wheels does not have starving children. And they're really good looking wheels. And you know what? If you have a, you should buy some Mamba wheels.
Wow. Just throw them out there.
I don't remember what wheel I used to have on my Jeep. The M23? I kind of made that up.
I think M13. But.
13. I was close.
We're just happy that you're here. Listen, if you have made it this far, I thank you sincerely with all of my heart. I appreciate everybody that has been listening to these and supplying feedback and spreading the word to their friends and other Drift comrades. We appreciate it. And I don't know. We hope you enjoy these. We don't do them for anything else besides Joey and my entertainment, I guess. But sometimes it also benefits you, which is wonderful. So that's it. I really hope that we have something cool to bring you after Irwindale. And if you're into FD podcasts only, check out some of the Wheel Wednesday podcasts we've been putting out every Wednesday. They're a little bit more technical as far as wheels are concerned, but we try not to bore you. Got some interesting stuff. Scoop through there. Maybe you'll find something. I don't know. That's it. Joey, are you ready to wrap this one up?
Let's wrap it.
All right. So that's it. We'll catch you after Irwindale. We'll have finished up the season. And I can't believe we made it through another year. Anyhow, that's it for this one. For more info on the podcast, head over to KoenigWheels.com/podcast. You can also catch us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, all at KoenigWheels USA. If you like what we're doing here, please subscribe. We're on iTunes, Google Play, and the full video version is always on YouTube. That's it, man. We're out of here. Peace. Not even gonna say goodbye to these people? All right. Peace.